on SOFpodcast.com, iTunes, and on Square One Football Radio. This is The Sound of Football.
Hello and welcome to The Sound of Football. Yes, episode 155 of Rocked Around. Yes, it comes by so quickly, doesn't it? Yes, the podcast that has all the promise, but subsequently all the disappointment of an Arsenal transfer rumour.
Whee!
Bad luck.
Ah, yes, I know. Hey, we've still got a few more days. Actually, we've got a whole week before the end of the transfer window.
A whole week to go yet.
I know. With me, as always, to my left is Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And straight across the table from me is Terry DeFallon.
Hi.
Nice two-finger one.
Thank you. Yeah. That was a two-finger high for those who aren't watching this.
Yes, yes, yes. If you do want to watch, please press the red button. But beware, we're not wearing any trousers.
But we are sitting by a table, so it's all right.
Yeah, but the camera's under the table.
And it's a glass table.
Yes, yes.
So just don't press the
red button. And where your imagination is going right now, that.
Unless the red button is stop, in which case, just go right ahead. It's fine.
So anyway, next week we're going to try and do something. We obviously, like, you know, a week's a long time in football, so we might change our minds. But as we are actually recording on transfer deadline, we're going to be trying to do something a bit special, just to get a bit, you know, get a bit of the feeling of
get our Jim White
completely on. I wonder if BT are going to try and do something to compete against it.
Oh yeah,
that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I bet you it'll be very Five Live.
Yeah,
it's a bit, BT's all right, but it's a bit Five Live. I mean, there's not necessarily anything inherently wrong with that.
Uh-huh. I mean, like, come on, they've dug up Dempsey now, so come on, they're going to wheel him out.
Yeah, I'm pleased Dempsey's sort of like back. I mean, I assume that Dempsey's probably been off working for Premier or something like that. I don't know where Dempsey's been at, but he's quite good. But it does seem to be made up.
Maybe he's been walking the earth.
He could have been. Yeah. But BT Sport is made up of sort of all the people who work for the BBC but didn't move to Manchester and all stayed in London, and so they're now kind of working at BT Sport. And that's cool. It's all right.
There's a lot of blue in their television program.
It is quite
very blue. It's like The Daily Show. Have you ever watched that American satire show?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you're actually referencing something that our international viewers may know.
Yes, very fine show it is. they've got it right there.
Many of our internationalist viewers will be watching through various unauthorised streams and probably will be familiar with the UK TV because it's often their best and most effective way of getting to watch the games that they want to watch because their local TV distributor may not necessarily provide them. So there is some relevance in discussing BT Sport, but we are actually supposed to be talking about transfers, so I guess we should probably talk about that.
Well, I suppose it's been the signing of the summer, though, isn't it, really? And people have been transferring their broadband and what have you to make new deals of their own.
That's very true. That's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, yes. And in a way, you're absolutely right. However, in a more accurate way, it's not about transfers at all.
So who's been the big stories of the summer then? Well, I suppose most of the stories still have yet to be written, haven't they, really? Because with a few days left to go, people still are just on the edge of going to their new clubs, but still not, and so they're still having an extended summer holiday.
The big transfers now that haven't happened are Wayne Rooney, Gareth Bale, and Arsenal.
Yes,
good,
because
good
there's been nothing going on with all three of those elements.
Mm. So on the Bale transfer or potential transfer or the transfer that hasn't actually happened yet, who is the mystery second bidder?
Ooh, well, if we knew that, it wouldn't be a mystery, would it? Unfortunately, we'd have to put our cards on the table. Our cards literally are on the table for top trumps later on. Stay tuned. But we have to say that we are not hashtag ITK, are we?
No, by no means. No.
Yes.
We know nothing about about what's going to happen.
Which means you can probably trust what we say just as much.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we know probably as much as all the other parties do. But has there been another bid then from another club?
That's what came out of Spurs.
Right. I mean, to what extent is that, you know, drumming up business? Yeah. You know, Dan Levy is becoming well known for his...
Is £86 million pounds not enough? I mean, is he now going to accuse Real Madrid of unsettling Gareth Bale?
I don't think there's any amount of money that is enough for Dan Levy. He strikes me as being the kind of cove for whom there is no limit when it comes to accumulating cash. In fairness, Tottenham do have a moderate conundrum because they were all hoping, pinning their hopes on moving to the Olympic Stadium and turning that into a big fat football stadium for them to live in. And now they have to do something closer to home, and they have to build a stadium smack bang in the middle of where they are. It's going to be really expensive, and it's going to cost, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds. So, you know, frankly, if you can shoehorn out an extra couple of million from that Bale transfer, then that's all going to be, well worth it in the long run. Now, Spurs fans may not see it like that because they might want to see the money on players, but you know, in fairness, how do you replace Gareth Bale? You don't. You're not. Unless you sign another player from Southampton, and he turns out to be just as good as the last one. Mm. You don't. You don't. There isn't really anyone like him out there now, or very, very few. So who are going to go to Tottenham? With respect.
Yes, even if they do have £86 million burning a hole in their pocket.
Yeah, and also all the other clubs are going to see Tottenham coming, aren't they? Because they're going to know that they've got all this money and think, well, you know, we can charge an extra X million on top of what we would normally charge somebody else.
Yeah, so it's the problem that Arsenal have been having ever since they said we got a £180 million war chest.
Yeah, well, I mean, the general naivety of Arsenal in the transfer market is a topic in of itself. But I mean, certainly, yes. Tottenham would probably be better off taking that money and spending it on bricks and mortar rather than necessarily spending it on flesh and blood.
I think the amount of money we're talking about is probably about a third of what Arsenal spent on the Emirates, I think, for Bale. So that's a very hefty
It's a big
dent.
Deposit on a new house, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you could get a mortgage for the rest of it, yeah. If you look at the fact that Arsenal have stood still or even gone backwards in that time, can Tottenham afford to take another step backwards?
Yeah, they're not in the same position that Arsenal were at the time,
are they? No, I mean Arsenal have dropped down a place or two, and they've been.
There's a big points chasm as well between sort of like the top of the table where they would normally be looking to win. Yeah. And where they are now, that's still okay because they still keep going into the Champions League. Mm. But as indeed they are confirmed as having gone through now, as you will know, listeners, but we are just finding out ourselves that live. So Tottenham aren't in that position. Tottenham have only qualified for the Champions League once, and they're spending money like a Champions League team, and they've assembled a squad that's worthy of the Champions League. Mm. But of course, they've got to marry that up with them moving into a new stadium and then continuing to keep the spending going. That's going to be difficult. Because if Arsenal found that difficult, then any club will find
it. Is it necessary, though? I mean, do they really need to move away from White Hart Lane? I mean, if we're moving into an age where revenue streams are coming more from television than they are from match day, which, while Europe made that move a long time ago, we're just coming to grips with that, with a lot of teams that are like that. The big teams, they don't, even though they make a hell of a lot of money from TV, they make even more money from match.
I don't see it like that at all. I think the reason why clubs are anxious to move into bigger and badder stadia is because of the money that they make. They make gazillions of pounds on a match day. I mean, so much money. I would still suggest to you that the majority of match day revenue comes from the takings, rather than, even if you stack that up against television appearance fees, sponsorship on the day, and any corporate monies that are coming in. I still would suggest to you that the majority of income on a match day comes from the turnstile. So I think it is really important. That's why so many clubs want to do it. And I mean, even Palace, you know, who arguably could have said, right, well, we've got 120 odd million pounds now, even if we go down, so let's go out and buy a load of players on it. But they would rather put it into a new stadium because, you know, they deep down, you know, that is the future and the prosperity of any football club is on their facilities.
I suppose it depends on the state of your current ground. I mean, I've never been to White Hart Lane, but it doesn't look too shabby.
No, there's nothing wrong with White Hart.
Whereas, with respect, Palace's ground is not the nicest ground, and it's quite Victorian, Palace. Isn't it?
But it certainly is very, very old. Mm. And the main stand in particular probably needs to be. I can only be a matter of time before it eventually isn't given its safety certificate. The Arthur Waite stand is just. It's functional but hideous and old, 1960s. And the only two new ones are the Homestale stand is the 1990s, as is the White Horse Lane stand. But those are executive boxes above the White Horse Lane stand were only designed to be there for 10 years, and they've been there for over two decades. So, I mean, you know, it is still something that you do, and that's why, you know, clubs like Palace, when they went up, said, well, actually, we'll just take the money. And you know, and then go. We've had a lovely season, but we're just going to take the money rather than. And you know, unfortunately, despite my bravado last season, I'm feeling a little bit more sober about things this week. Alas,
no. But I mean, I still would like to explore the point as to why Tottenham would need to either redevelop or move grounds. Is it that bad?
I think another thing that you've got to look at is that West Ham are going to have a very near rival, are going to have this huge ground. So they'll be receiving all the benefits from it, and Tottenham won't be. So although they've got to put up with the fact that there's going to be a running track around it.
But what's it going to be? It's going to be 50,000, is it? Something like that?
Well, it's going to be pretty huge, isn't it? So they've got this lovely big stadium. Arsenal have got a lovely big stadium.
But keeping up with the Joneses more than anything else, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, like they're already London's third team. They don't want to be London's fourth team, do they?
They probably.
I don't think a bigger ground's going to relegate them to that. I mean, in the ground stakes.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because we don't know the economics of West Ham's existence. You know, when they do move, if they're still in the Premier League. And if they stay there and they keep a large significant portion of their match day revenue from the stadium, then they could suddenly become a very big club because of the money that they make.
I think a lot of the match day takings go on go straight on the wages if it even covers them.
Well, yeah, true. But I mean, with the more money they have, the more wages that they can pay.
Yeah, it comes down to how well you run the club, though, then, in that case, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and all of these are all variables that we probably would best not to make judgments over at this point.
So, but what do you think about Bale going to Real Madrid? Like, good fit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's a cracking player. He's one of the best players in the world. Mm. And I realise it is kind of hackneyed to say that, but I mean, at the moment, he's absolutely on top of things. So a guy like that should be playing for a European giant, and Real Madrid most definitely qualified.
It's a mouth-watering prospect of Bale and Ronaldo on the same side, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah.
But there was, of course, talk that Ronaldo was going to be surplus to requirements. Well, was that just paper talk?
I think that
was squarely aimed at Man United fans. Talk of Rooney leaving, wasn't
there's
it?
There is, we all may or may not be aware of the whole Bring Ronaldo Home campaign, which I think has kind of slightly fizzled out.
Thankfully.
back to Madeira.
Because it was a monstrosity of a campaign. An abomination, in fact. And I wonder whether or not the thought that Ronaldo would then go back to Manchester United was kind of you know, mooted off the back of that. But to the best of my knowledge, it would be Ronaldo on one side and Bale on the other. Fullbacks just like, you know, in checking in, you know, immediately afterwards thinking.
And it sounds like Benzema's still in the middle because his promised move to Arsenal looks like it's fizzling out.
Maybe we should have a discussion about Arsenal then and about that. I mean, try not to get too monologue-y because I'm sure it's something that you have an opinion on, but I mean, obviously, Arsenal are now through.
Yes.
You said last week that you felt that probably what would happen is that, that they, or you inferred,
yes,
that what would happen is that Arsenal would start to spend once they got their Champions League qualifications,
yes,
secured. Do you believe that that is now the case?
I'm really not as sure as I was last week about that, because I don't know who they're going to buy, and I don't know what position they're going to buy. I mean, they've had a few good results, or, yeah, albeit against opposition which, you know, on the day, they may look very, very beatable. Mm. But I suppose you've got to put in the performances, haven't you?
What slightly concerns me about Arsenal's targets is that they all appear to be players where they're relatively well served. Usually attacking players,
yeah,
where they do have some fine attacking players, Oxlade-Chamberlain, mm, and Theo Walcott, yes, Lucas Podolski, Olivier Giroud. I realise is perhaps not, his reputation isn't as good as given last season, but I mean he does know where the back of the net is, and he certainly started the season like that.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking about is more in terms of their defensive midfielders and their centre halves.
Mm.
I mean, you know, I love Per Mertesacker, but you know, I would suggest that there's definitely an upgrade on him out there, definitely somewhere, and a goalkeeper.
Oh, yeah, but then in the last two games against Fulham and in tonight's game against Fenerbahce, you've seen the best side of Chesney.
Right,
it's difficult. I mean, I think. It's easy. A lot of fans get on the backs of individual players, but players like Ramsey have come in for a lot of shtick. And tonight he scored two goals. He started off the season fantastically well.
Mm.
I think the problem is a lot of the time is that a lot of the Arsenal's key players are very, very injury prone, and you can't rely on them. People like, we had it with Van Persie, and we've still got it with people like Rzyski. With Ramsey and Diaby especially, and it's looking like
why is that? Van Persie's gone to Manchester United. Yeah. He hasn't been injured since.
Yeah,
Van Persie.
Mind you, in the season beforehand, he played virtually a full season.
That's true.
And in the season before that, I think he was out for the first couple of months, and then he played through for the rest of it. Right. So in the last 18 months, he was with us. He was fit.
I mean, one thing that I still don't think you can criticise. Wenger's approach is in terms of their fitness and the dietary, all that stuff.
Yeah,
he kind of modernised English football when he came in, and it's possible that his methods may not be as up to date as maybe younger coaches that have come in.
Mm.
But I don't think you can really imply that the way that he trains and then manages his players means that they end up getting injured more often.
I think you could perhaps
suggest that he tends to sign players who are injury prone.
There is a case, I think, that Arsenal, when they have made purchases, they've simply made purchases in the last 5 years, I think especially, they've been players that Chelsea and Man City just don't want.
Mm.
And haven't bothered to go in for.
Yeah.
And I think there was...
Well, they almost got Wan-Mata, didn't they?
Well, and the same with Aguero as well.
Yeah.
So there's two very sort of influential players there. I think as well, Arsenal has been used by a lot of agents in the game as a stalking horse to push up any offers that they're going, especially when they go to the mega rich clubs to say, oh, well, Arsenal are interested.
Yeah, I mean, it is difficult to get a full picture, obviously, because there's just so much that we don't know. And I imagine that anybody in the know would probably be listening to this. I mean, genuinely in the know would be listening to this and thinking that we're being somewhat naive. But, you know, the perception does appear to be that Arsenal are slow and second best when it comes to keeping up and picking up the best transfers.
It did seem
last season as well, and then they signed Arteta at the last minute.
Yeah, but he's
a fine player, but he's not the type of player that.
Arteta, Mertesacker, they were all signed after we qualified for Europe. So it was those sort of.
Mm.
Yeah, as you say, as we were going about on last week. Yeah, it's...
Do you think they can't attract?
I think they certainly can attract, but I think there are more attractive clubs out there. I think there are just basically richer clubs out there, and that's why I found the whole Rooney thing laughable, because I thought one of the last clubs you'll go to anyway is Arsenal.
I was moderately surprised that there was any credence in the Suarez thing as well, because I would have felt that although Arsenal being a Champions League club, or even at the time technically a Champions League club, provisional Champions League club, I'd have felt that there would have had to have been a fairly substantial increase in his package to persuade him to go to Arsenal. I would have imagined that Suarez was probably more like more of a Real Madrid signing, a regular sort of Championship winning club signing. But
how much of that was interplay? I mean, like you could formulate any number of conspiracy theories about how players and clubs are bouncing off each other, and then obviously you can draw like big diagrams of saying, well, Real probably will say, well, look, we're not going to pay that much for Bale. You know, if we're going to be spending, we'll spend half the money of that on Suarez, and we'll have 80% of the player.
Yeah,
We'll still, if you put Suarez in Real Madrid, he'll score 30 plus easily.
You think so? Yeah.
When he's not biting the opposition.
But when he's
in Spain, he'll probably get away with it there.
Yeah, probably would.
You might find that the Spanish culture suits him a little bit better, and that he's more easily understood rather than misunderstood from his point of view. So, he might enjoy that. But I mean, as it is, he's not going to Liverpool. So he's not leaving Liverpool. So that's the end of it, at least for the time being. So we'll see. Mm. Maybe we should talk about Wayne Rooney.
Yes, we should. Because Wayne
was one of the bright lights of what was an otherwise dull game yesterday. I thought he played really well yesterday.
He had something a bit more to prove than anyone else.
It's a slight patronising tone to my saying that, but because he has been pretty substandard lately, but he does seem to have started the season well. Yeah, again, maybe as you say, he's
in the shop window.
There is that as well. He's either in the shop window or he's got to try and win hearts and minds.
Yeah, one way or the other. Yeah, he has something to prove, either to his new manager in another club as of yet not determined, or to his new manager in the current club that he works for, because he doesn't want to spend the season sitting on the bench or worse, playing in the reserve. So, he needs to get his professional thing on and start
with the World,
doing it.
Yeah, with the World Cup approaching, he doesn't want to have Darren Welbeck playing every week while he's...
Danny Welbeck? No. Yeah. No, he doesn't. I mean, Welbeck's a funny cove. I like him. But he can be a bit sort of... But he does play well for England, which is... Or at least he scores, which is quite good in itself. What do you think that, or is it this naive to suggest that if a player doesn't play that much for his club is actually in a World Cup year, that's actually not necessarily a bad thing if he's going to play for his national team? I mean, I think that they could put Rooney in the reserves and I still reckon Roy Hodgson would pick him, because we have so few options in terms of creative attacking players that I don't really see how we would not pick him.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't stop Owen getting into
it. Certainly didn't. No. So I mean, my theory therefore would be that even if Wayne Rooney was sat on the bench for most of the season, he'd still play for England, and if anything, he'd be fresher and maybe a little bit more keen. He'd switch his priority somewhat. Actually, as an England fan, is a good thing.
Might affect his fitness, though. And as well as that, if you're a striker, you get used to it. Winning should be a habit.
But does he really want to go to a World Cup with only 7 or 8 goals?
If he plays, but the thing is, he won't spend the whole season sat on his backside, even if he doesn't move, and even if he falls out with Moyes, because he is that good. He will still get games, but he's likely to be starting from the bench, maybe playing 30 minutes, 20 minutes, here and there, or starting Carling Cup games or Capital One Cup games. This may play into England's hands, because while he'll maintain a relative sharpness, and maybe he'll move his priorities over to playing for England. And
the thing is, though, it looks to be continuing, that he always seems to be played quite deep instead of you know, right up front in a kind of Gary Lineker role, if you like. And that's the kind of player he is, isn't he? He's up front, and he's not a target man because he's quite short and squat. But he,
certainly can run at players. Right?
Yeah, he's powerful, and you wouldn't want him on your shoulder. But he's played very, very deep, and he's almost like a midfielder these days. And I think it'd be better for him to move and to go to Chelsea and actually be played up front.
Do you think that's where Mourinho would play Rooney? He'd play him up front as a central striker up front?
Well, every time I've seen him in that position, he's done really, really well.
Despite what Mourinho said yesterday about requiring mobility against Manchester United in that game, you can't ignore the fact that Andre Schürrle is an attacking right or left side midfielder. And doesn't play up front very often. I mean, when he was playing at Mainz, he played up front, but he's been at Leverkusen for 3 years, and has rarely played up front. And there were some Bundesliga types saying, "Oh well, Schürrle's played, he's played up front before, but not against Manchester United. He's not." And that was much earlier in his career. So I was surprised to see him playing up front there, and it does suggest to me that that Mourinho is not confident in his striking options. He doesn't think that Lukaku is ready, and possibly doesn't think that Torres is good enough in the first place, which would suggest that
Mourinho... And he's got Demba Ba as well.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is with Demba Ba at all, because Demba Ba for me is a fantastic player. But again, these are not questions we can answer. But of all the options that he did have, he chose a 4-6-0. Against Manchester United. It may well have been that he just wanted to be defensive. He didn't want to lose a game so early in his tenure.
Maybe he was trying to make a point to the...
He may have been trying to make a statement.
Yeah.
Either way, by doing something like that, there's an awful lot of inference involved. And we're all sitting there on whatever fits into our own personal views. But if you like the idea of Rooney playing for Chelsea, then you can certainly would get an awful lot from what he did yesterday.
I think it'd be good for him to move anyway.
You think so?
he's been institutionalised, really, hasn't he? He's a Manchester United player. I mean, not many people remember him playing for Everton. But I think he should do.
I'm sure his current manager does.
Yeah. All right. With the exception of his current manager,
which is probably why he wants to move out.
But I think it would be good for him, and he's a good player, and he should play every week, and I think it would do him good, especially this year, to go to a different club.
The idea of Rooney and Mourinho together is quite an attractive one. You get the impression that Mourinho is still very much one of these guys who can inspire a great deal of loyalty and even love from his players. And I think that if Rooney wanted to work for Mourinho and responded well to Mourinho's motivation, then it would be very good for him and for Chelsea, and probably, most importantly, from my point of view, for England, it would be really, really good. Mm. It wouldn't be a massively, it wouldn't be a bad move for him. London's not a hideous place, and it's not a million miles away, so...
No. But Chelsea is a bit of a graveyard for strikers, though, isn't it?
Can be, yeah. Has been. Well, I mean, certainly for the most recent striker that they signed, it was a bit of a graveyard. But,
Shevchenko?
Yeah, it's certainly. I mean, I think there may have been extenuating circumstances around Shevchenko, but it's a good point. It's worth bearing in mind that the last two really high-profile ones that were brought in were not such good signings, but neither of them were actually Mourinho signings. It's also worth bearing in mind Shevchenko certainly wasn't Mourinho's idea, and that Mourinho wasn't there when they signed Torres. Would have been interesting to have seen how he would have reacted if he had been there and they signed Torres, because it might well be that he wouldn't have necessarily chose him. But still, any more transfers that we need to talk about?
I think we're going to have to wind up for this week. I think
we've done an awful lot about not transfers, but that's okay.
Yeah, well, we've whetted your appetite for the fun and games that will be on next week when the window finally shuts. So for this week, from me, Jan and Terry, it's goodbye.
And we'll see you for Top Jumps after the music.
Bye-bye.
Right.
Right.
Bottom card.
No.
Bottom card or top card?
It's
my go, isn't it?
contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
So, Terry, before we start, got to be happy with last week's performance.
Overjoyed. Over the moon, you might say. Yeah, I mean, I looked down and I saw a number of trophies and I thought, get in. And yeah, so there it was. It was a bit close. Yeah, put up a right great fight. But, you know, I'm just happy to get the 3 points, really.
Yeah, good to get an early win.
Cards, I should say.
Yeah, good to get an early win under
Well, yeah, the lads are happy in the dressing room now that, you know, yeah. Now that we've got those first three cards under our belt.
And, sure. Any hints on how you're going to go out today?
Well, I think what I'll do is I'll just look and see what the highest number is, and then I'll just choose that, I reckon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Best of luck.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Yes, it's match day 2 of Sound of Football Top Trumps. And if you joined us from last week, Terry won the hand and is calling.
Alrighty. Okay. Well, I'm going to go career goals. And I'm going to go 241.
Well, you've got me beat because I've got Philip Lahm.
How many? Just out of interest.
Career goals, 18.
18, okay.
I think he still beat Scott Parker.
I've got an impressive, but not enough, 123.
Oh, here we go.
Gonzalo, I'm going to pronounce this badly.
Higuain. Sorry.
No, it was better than...
Listeners, what do you have? Well, listeners should know, because they would have watched their card.
Yeah, the listeners will also know that you really picked the wrong one, because it's Gerard Piqué, a really good card, but obviously the career goal's just 22.
Okay, well, I mean, I had Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
Oh, Zlatan, there we go. So, for the second week in a row, Terry...
I win again. Yes. Here you go.
The
momentum's
with you, really, isn't it?
Clearly, the momentum's with you.
Join us again next week for Sound Football Top Trumps.